As always, all human beings make mistakes and get things wrong sometimes. I'm a human being, therefore, I make mistakes and get things wrong sometimes. While I was preparing, it struck me that this is a particularly important thing to say this morning, and I was also reminded we've all had Claire on our minds, obviously, a lot over the last few months. But when Claire first joined the church, and I think we're talking 15, 16, maybe more years ago, being the kind of person she was, she observed the way we behaved, what the culture was, that kind of thing, and made comments. They were really good, insightful comments. And this is one of them. I like this one so much that I've called it Claire's principle and rather adopted it. In this church, responsibility for determining truth lies with the person sitting down, not the person standing up. And this is true. In our church, this is the way it is. Not in all churches, probably not in most churches. Those with very hierarchical priesthoods, people wouldn't see things this way at all. So the role of the person standing up is to do their research and pray and come up with thoughts which will stimulate reflection in the hearts and minds of the people who are sitting down. And those who are sitting down may reflect, you know, what does this mean to me? What does this mean for us as a church? Is God showing us something through this? And that's the important bit. The desired outcome is that something should happen in the hearts and the minds of the people sitting down. I should say something happens in the hearts and the minds of the person standing up as well, because actually preparing one of these sessions is terrific. It's great. It really makes you think, makes you pray. And I recommend it to anyone who might be here that you try it, because it's very good for the person standing up. Okay, today's topic for reflection is, what did Jesus say about evangelism? I want to make it clear, I'm not talking about Greek today. I'm not talking about the word euangelios, which is where we get the word evangelism from. And I'm not talking about what Jesus, that just means good news, by the way. I'm not talking about what Jesus preached as good news, that is the coming of the kingdom of God. What I'm talking about, what did Jesus say about evangelism as we understand it today? There were two occasions, I think, when Jesus clearly spoke about what we would call evangelism today. One was when he sent out his disciples. We'll come back to that in a minute. The other occasion, which I want to look at first, is actually right at the end of his time on earth, what is called the Great Commission, the end of Matthew. We read that, so this is after the resurrection. We read that the disciples came to Jesus, and Jesus spoke to them and said, "All authority in heaven on earth has been given to me. As you are going, therefore, make disciples of all nations, teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you." An important thing here says, as you are going. In most Bibles, you're going to find that just says, go. And it sounds like a command. It's not a command, because in the Greek, it's not an imperative. What he's saying is not go. It's not an order. Rather, he is saying something. It's a participle, and that means he's probably got ing on the end of it in English. So there is something there where he is saying, as you are going, or as you go, or possibly having gone, something along those lines. That's actually important. We will keep coming back to that. But he is not saying go and do this. He is saying that this is an ongoing feature of what you do. Is he saying that the disciples' primary task is to make disciples? It's not clear. But when you talk about the totality of Jesus' teaching, I would say, no, he is not saying that. Because what Jesus is constantly saying in his teaching is how his disciples, all of his disciples, right through to us, should treat other people. It comes down to that one word, love. Love your neighbour. So I think the disciples, as they go about their loving their neighbour, out living the life the way Jesus wants them to live, will be making disciples. How is that going to happen? Well, we might come back to that. I'm not saying that making disciples isn't important. The question is how we make disciples, and hopefully that will be clearer. Here's something else that Jesus said that seems to be relevant to evangelism. "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all of the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." So we're not to keep ourselves to ourselves. We're not to keep quiet. We're not to live lives which are in there. We're supposed to be the light of the world. We're supposed to be noticed. What is our light? What are these good works? Well, the way Jesus told us to do it was you love your neighbour. You treat others the way you like to be treated yourself. You don't judge others, you don't condemn others, you forgive others, And so you pray for those who persecute you, all that stuff that we know. But it can be summed up in that one word, love. And if we live our lives that way, we will be different. We will be noticed. People may want to know why we are like that. I know that we're all works in progress in terms of learning to follow Jesus' teachings. I am. I'm just assuming that everybody else here is a work in progress. Yes. Moving on. Conversations. We're all involved in conversations. Every day we're involved in conversations, and it's in these conversations that our difference is going to show. And today we have the extraordinary opportunity to have conversations with people all over the world. And I do it quite a lot. And I'll be in a conversation and I'll say something, and someone from Texas will comment on it, and someone from Nigeria will like it, and someone possibly in, I don't know, wherever, will say, that's a load of rubbish, this is what I think. You know, that is absolutely brilliant that we can do that. Yes, okay. A question we might ask ourselves is, how should we let our light shine as part of the conversations that we're involved in? And should evangelism be part of that conversation? I think we may, during the conversations that we have, talk about our walk with God. If our light is shining, if we're following the teachings of Jesus, will other people notice? Yes, they will notice it. They will notice it in our conversations. Let's talk about the early church and what happened there just for a while. I'm getting a bit nervous that I've been speaking for nearly 10 minutes and nobody's interrupted yet. But, you know, it's okay. So, all in good time. The early church grew, as I think we all know, at an astonishing rate. The Roman establishment ignored it at first, but within 100, 150 years, they couldn't ignore it. Christians were beginning to be noticed as a group and were beginning to be perceived as a problem. What happens when your group begins to be perceived as a problem by the powers that be? Gandhi said this: first they ignore you, then they mock you, then they fight you, then you win. And I don't think there's any doubt that this is what happened with the early church, although the fighting was pretty messy. I came across, while I was doing the research for this, a guy by the name of Celsus. People here, apart from David, yes, I knew David, but know who Celsus was. Yes, know who Celsus was? He was a Greco-Roman philosopher, and he didn't like Christians. And this is what he said. I need to make it something very clear. He's being ironic when he says that. That's the important thing. So I'm going to try and read this in an ironic tone of voice. That's why I'm doing it, because he is really being ironic when he says this. Sarcastic, perhaps. If you really wish to know the truth, leave your teachers and your father. Oh, I should have said, this guy's a screaming misogynist, by the way. Yeah, so you will get that. If you really wish to know the truth, leave your teachers and your father and go with the women and children to the women's quarters or to the cobbler's shop or to the tannery, and there you will learn the perfect life. It is in these places that Christians find those who will believe them. Isn't that interesting? That he should be pointing out that where Christians do their conversations and where people start showing interest in those conversations is not in the churches, is not in it's out in the community, is out in the places where poor people are and where people who are not terribly important are. That is interesting because of something Jesus said. I thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and have revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, such was your gracious will. Another version of that said that it actually gives God pleasure to hide things from the wise and learned and reveal them to little children. This should be really encouraging. The church grew and grew phenomenally because uneducated people, those who were looked down on because of their status or their gender, talked about their trust in God when they were having conversations with other people. Any one of us can do this. We don't need education in order to have a conversation. We're going to look at Jesus' instructions to the disciples when he sent them out. You remember him sending them out. See which of those instructions that he gave them might apply to us. Clearly they don't all apply to us, but some of them might. Before that, are there any comments or questions? Oh dear. Disappointment. Actually, we've had, because Phil and I did not apart from Phil knew what I was going to be talking about, Phil and I did not get on the phone and say, hey, let's do this, let's do that. So some of that conversation has already happened, and it was really good, by the way. Well done, Phil. Yes. Okay, we may be finishing early today, if this continues. So Jesus sent out the disciples. The account of him sending out the disciples happens in all three synoptic gospels, as they're called. Matthew, Mark and Luke all have an account of this account of Jesus sending out the disciples. They do vary. Luke actually says there were 72 went out, and Matthew and Mark both say 12. But the language is so similar that, generally speaking, people think this is the same occasion. And there is no record of it being two separate occasions, like with the feeding of the 5,000 and 4,000 are quite clearly regarded as two separate occasions. Doesn't happen with this one. Before Jesus sends out his disciples, he gives them a set of instructions. What I'd like us to do is ask ourselves, does this instruction apply to us? Does this instruction have any relevance for us today? When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. He said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. Most important thing about this, Phil grew up in the Brethren Church, I grew up in the Brethren Church, Michael grew up in the Brethren Church, so we grew up in strong evangelical churches. Another one. Anybody else want to confess? Yeah? Right, okay, one or two. Yes, yes, go, plenty of us. Deeply evangelical situations, and would have heard this verse lots of times, only it would stop there. The harvest is plentiful, but the labourers are few. You notice what happens next? Therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out labourers. It's not a call to evangelism, it's a call to prayer. And I think this does apply to all of us, that we pray that God will equip people and encourage people to be evangelists. The good news in that is that we are not all called to be evangelists. There's different work for everybody, and you may or may not be called to do evangelism. I know, and I grew up in a very evangelical church, I know that I was not called to be an evangelist. I've known that since I was about 20. That I'm not called to be an evangelist, that I am called to work with Christians. So I knew that when I was 20, and it wasn't until I was 60, 40 years later, just like Moses, that God called me to full-time service working with Christians, which I'm still doing. But I'm fairly sure that we are all called to pray, even if we're not all called to be evangelists. Here's some instruction. This is Luke's version. Versions of the story are slightly different. In terms of what Jesus told the disciples that they should and should not take on their journey, they're different. But they all say they shouldn't take any money. Imagine going on a journey and not taking any money. Why not? Because he's sending them out to have conversations with people, and you don't need money to have a conversation. There's an obvious contrast here with evangelism as we so often understand it. And I grew up in an era where you could go to things called Billy Graham rallies. And I am not knocking Billy Graham. I saw a wonderful documentary about him the other day. And there was a guy who was a godly man, wanted to serve God, and was quite happy to say that he made mistakes and got things wrong. And to go and apologize when that was necessary. He just shouldn't have started thinking that it was a good idea to get cozy with politicians. That was the main mistake he made. Certainly politicians like Richard Nixon. I'm digressing. I went to two Billy Graham rallies, carrying on with my digression. One of them was at Wembley Stadium. 86,000 people were there, and the idea was that young people would actually sit on the pitch, on the hallowed turf at Wembley. And I was 15. Me and my mate Steve had a great idea. Oh, well, we thought this was great. We were actually going to sit on the turf at Wembley. We got right at the front of the queue of people waiting to get in, and when they opened the gates, we ran out onto the pitch line, waving at all the crowds. There were about a few hundred people there by then. The rest of the 86,000 turned up later. But anyway, we did that. Then we put our bags and our coats and things in two little piles to make goals. And we'd taken a little plastic football along with us, and we spent some time. So you are actually looking at someone who has scored a goal at Wembley Stadium. Now I'm really digressing. Yes, sorry. We don't need money to have a conversation. Later, according to Luke, Jesus asked the disciples he sent out if they had lacked anything, and they responded. He said, when I sent you out with no money bag or knapsack or sandals, did you lack anything? They said, nothing. Okay, let's look at some of the other things that Jesus said to his disciples as he sent them out, see if they're important for us. Behold, I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be as wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Innocent, literally, the Greek word means unmixed. Could be translated sincere. Could be translated blameless. Possibly pure. A couple of things from this. Jesus sends his followers out into the world to do his work. We don't do it by doing things the world's way. And I think a lot of Christians really need to get hold of this. We are completely different to the way the world operates, and that's what makes us interesting. We don't go out among the wolves behaving like wolves. We don't say, okay, we're here to give a message to wolves, therefore we need to be as much like wolves as possible so they will relate to us. That's not what we're called to at all. We deliberately behave unlike wolves because Jesus' way of doing things is not the world's way. It's nothing like it. That's what makes us interesting. Being sent out as sheep among wolves makes me think about something which isn't here, which is the importance of trusting God, not relying on my own wisdom. Jesus seems to be thinking the same thing, as we shall see shortly. Hello? Give that man a microphone.
I was reminded just a moment ago of, I don't know if it's multiple passages, but there's one in Corinthians where Paul's saying, to the Jews I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law I became like one under the law so as to win those under the law, and so forth. That, on the face of it, seems counter to I don't become a wolf to win the wolves.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
I have another question, I've got the microphone. I'm interested that for you, evangelism is only ever a conversation. It's only ever words. And yet when you talk about Billy Graham, it's the being on the pitch. And like that's the thing that actually was exciting for you. Like, I feel uncomfortable as evangelism being a conversation only.
Sorry, can I ask you to take your mask off? Yes. I'm really having trouble.
I feel uncomfortable with the idea that evangelism is only ever a conversation and it's never an act.
Right. The only thing I can remember about Wembley Stadium, about the actual goings-on on the stage, is that Carl Perkins entertained us, was a support act. That's the only thing I can remember. Some research was done which showed that almost everybody who becomes a Christian, this was a global research, actually done by the Billy Graham Organisation, funnily enough. My brother was in one of their mass meetings in the Philippines of evangelists and pastors when this guy stood up and said that he'd done this massive statistical survey of how people became Christians. And 90% of people who become Christians do so through the witness of family and friends. And there was a dead silence, and then people started laughing because their whole purpose for being there was they were part of the, you know, they were all evangelists and pastors. I'm not going to say there's absolutely no place for that kind of thing. Maybe I am saying there's absolutely no place for that kind of thing. I'm not sure. I'll leave that with you because that's for people who are sitting down to work out. Yes.
You said early on that Jesus is calling us to love others. That's his calling to us. And I guess an act of love isn't necessarily a conversation. So I guess if you're equating evangelism to us loving others, then often our response to others in love is not a conversation, but a
something, to do something stuff. Else.
A meal or a hug or a...
Sorry?
Like a meal or a hug or something else, yes, that's not a conversation.
Yeah. I would question whether that's not a conversation. I think basically all we do is have conversations, I suspect, and I think a hug is very definitely part of a conversation. It's just not words. Ken?
I also just give a thumbs up.
Ah, right, good. Thank you. Okay, thanks. Michael again.
I'm going to try and be succinct here, but I always have trouble with that. One of my biggest learnings about evangelism and what is it not was going to Nepal. And the problem I have with my heritage, my background, is that evangelism is equated with being able to share the gospel and require someone to respond to a certain narrow dogmatic doctrinal proposition about God and Jesus.
Yep.
And the way that came up to me was when we went to Nepal and we were in language training and orientation with our fellow expat evangelicals. Many of them had as their goal of language learning being able to share their testimony, to propose something. That was their, that came out of an evangelical background. I just thought that was weird, because I wanted to be able to ask questions about people's experience of God and the divine. And what that did for me theologically, that came from a mindset that until I got there, until we got to Nepal, God wasn't present. The Spirit wasn't present till I got there. And I thought that was rubbish.
Yes.
And what I got out of that was to understand that my calling is not to make people Christians. My calling is to get involved with people in relationship and being willing to share my spiritual journey with them. But trust that the Spirit of God was already alive and well in their world and in their work, whether it fitted my doctrinal baggage or not, and to support them to follow their sense of God and the Spirit in their lives.
Yeah.
And it was just, so that's huge for me. So that's...
Yeah.
Evangelism is an evangelical construct, not a biblical construct.
Yes. Very similar to what Ken was saying earlier, and I couldn't agree more. But that's another sermon, I think.
I think it's because it makes us angry that we reject things like the Billy Graham rallies and the big rallies. But I guess I want to challenge you to say that they have a place, because... particularly for young people, they are exciting and they are an opportunity. They're a space for people to think about something they've never thought about before. That then means they're able to have that conversation. And I guess I feel uncomfortable. Like, I never want to do that stuff again. Like, I never want to do that ever again. But I'm uncomfortable with the idea that we don't accept that they have a place, because for my children, they might have a place. Yeah. And I want them to be able to talk to you about, I went to this amazing thing and there was this person and they said these things, and for you to not go, ugh. Because they have a place, even if it's tedious for us.
Yeah, no argument, none at all. Shall I go on?
Yeah.
Where are we? Beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in their synagogues, and you will be dragged before governors and kings for my sake, to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. I don't think this is directly applicable to our situation, but we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, of course. This verse probably is, but it comes directly after the other verse. So we're talking when they deliver you over. It follows on immediately. Do not be anxious how you are to speak or what you are to say, for what you are to say will be given to you in that hour. It is not you who speak, the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Is it true for us today, when we're talking to our neighbour, or when we're standing up and talking here, or whenever, that God will speak through us? Can we be sure of that? I think the answer to that is yes and no, because although we may want God to speak through us and we may pray that God will speak through us, we still make mistakes and get things wrong sometimes, is my experience. But we certainly should be praying that God will speak through us. This is a bit more relevant. If anyone will not receive you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet when you leave that house or town. I don't think physically we need to do that. But there is something in this for us. Jesus expressed a similar thought on another occasion. Do not, really vicious language, do not give dogs what is holy. Do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. One thing, pigs in those days were likely to have been much more aggressive than they are now, and they can be very aggressive now. And basically, when a pig sees you going like this in front of pigs, the pig thinks that you're feeding them. So the pig comes charging up, looks at this and says, this isn't food, and turns around and tramples you, according to this verse, because they don't realise that what it is very valuable. The message is, don't waste your time discussing the things of God with people who are really uninterested.
I think when people react negatively to what you say, it's good to not overread that or to think that that's the end of their thinking on
it. Yes, I think in this situation, exactly, a situation where you are discussing, you know, you're talking to somebody about your faith and they really feel as though they don't want to discuss it, then you don't discuss it then. But what you certainly don't do is carry on harassing them and haranguing them about how important Christianity is. Just let it be, I would say. Still love them, no question about it. Still be a Christian. Still do all that stuff. Okay, we're not all called to be evangelists. We are all called to pray that God will send his workers out, I think, and that evangelism is or can be certainly something that happens as we go. All of these three readings, and including the Great Commission, Jesus is talking about people going out. And as Brian said in that article, what churches tend to focus on is bringing people in. The purpose of evangelism is not to encourage people into our churches. The purpose of evangelism is to encourage them into the love relationship with God that he wants to have with every one of his human children. And that's our job in that role. And it's not difficult. Jesus said, "Come to me, all who labour and are heavy laden, I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. You will find rest for your soul. My yoke is easy, my burden is light." And John, the beloved disciple, echoed this, saying, "This is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome." I think it's important to remember that when you come to Jesus, you take on the role of a servant, and a servant is an extremely privileged position, because you don't have to make management decisions. You're not responsible for executive outcomes. You're only responsible for listening and serving. Our culture doesn't encourage us to take on that role. Our culture tells us to be influencers and leaders. And I think this is another area in which we can show that we are different to the way the world works. I don't know if we've got time. I don't think we have we? Just quickly, what stops us? I was going to do this as a whiteboard exercise, but I won't. Just thoughts. Can we have the microphone ready?
Really hard to have a spiritual conversation without actually just having an honest conversation. I think they're the same thing.
Yes.
And it's about being able to answer the conversation. If you're a bloke living in Australia, what did you do on the weekend?
Yeah.
So we don't need rules that enacted by governments, because we've got a culture that has learnt, whereby people have been have learnt to feel afraid to answer that question accurately. Yeah. So evangelism is having an honest conversation.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Evangelism,
and it's asking more than it is telling.
So evangelism would be saying, under those circumstances, "Well, I went to church as I usually do."
Well, you could do it whatever way there, but it's an honest conversation. And many people are afraid of having honest conversations.
Yeah.
In the discussion earlier in the service, Elise mentioned that she just never had those situations, that it never came up, that talking God stuff. You should catch my train sometime. It happens a lot. And partly it's cultural. In our society, it is the poor and the Aboriginal who carry a sense of the nearness of God, for whom it is near the surface, and they're not afraid to talk about it with other people.
Yes.
It is the wise and the intellectual and the teachers and the teachers and the fathers and all the other ones in that quote from Jesus that they that say you can't talk about this stuff. And yeah, this stuff comes up, and it is intertwined with people's lives. If there's the fear isn't there, and I'm pretty sure if I was to buy myself a black shirt and a white collar and just spend my life riding the trains, I would have somebody want to confess to me every single day on the train right there that they have something that they need to say that's burdening them, that's getting between them and God.
Yep.
So the opportunities are there, people are there. There is so much history that we have in our society that frames the world in that exclusively materialist fashion that doesn't leave a space for the transcendent,
yep.
for the ultimately the larger reality. But the opportunity is there. We do have to listen. And I say that as somebody who is absolutely not temperamentally equipped to cope with people wanting to share with me, to confess to me, or to ask me questions about God.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens. And I've just got to do my best.
Yeah, that's all any of us can do. I'm going to finish with a story. Sorry, it's not a story. It's not, in the sense it's not fiction, it's an account. As I've told you, I grew up in this... whether you find this encouraging or not, it will depend entirely on you. I grew up, as I said, in this very evangelical church. And at this church for some years, there was a man who was the shyest person I've ever met. And I can't remember his name, but conversations with him usually went, if his name was Les, hi Les, how are you? And then he'd just smile and nod. And he was just incredibly shy. Anyway, one evening we were having one of our meetings and we were invited to stand up and talk about the experiences we'd had of sharing the gospel during the week. One or two people got up and Les got up. And everybody thought, well, what's all this about then? And he got and made his way to the microphone, white-faced and shaking. He stammered and he shook and he started telling us this story. He said that he'd been praying for a long time that he would be able to share his faith with his workmates, but he just couldn't do it. And this week, he'd just been sitting at his desk and one of his workmates came along and said, have you been converted, Les? And Les thought, well, okay, here we go. And he started stammering out, yes, and this is how he gave his life to Jesus and what it's meant to him. And after a while, the colleague put his hand up and he said, what I meant was, have you been converted to natural gas? But no, but go on with what you were saying.